Not many of us go around restoring ruined temples or collecting ancient artifacts for fun anymore, but those were some of the activities of the earliest known hobbyists. Times have changed, the demands of our lives have changed too, and so have our hobbies. Right now we have a lot of options out there, and whether we want it or not, a lot of people have some extra free time right now. And learning about hobbies of the past could add a little perspective to whatever project you might be chiseling away at now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your hobby, and are you spending a lot of time on it these days? Again, call 800-642-1234. Amanda Foreman is a historian and author of several books, including her next book, The World Made by Women, A History of Women from the Apple to the Pill, out in 2021. She's a columnist at the Wall Street Journal with the biweekly Historically Speaking column and an honorary research senior fellow in the history department at the University of Liverpool. She wrote the recent column, Hobbies for Kings and the People, for the Wall Street Journal. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, hobbies are common now. You write if we go back a few thousand years, not so much. What are our first signs that some people, maybe at the top of the social ladder, were having hobbies of their own?
Well, the very first sign that we have of somebody having a genuine hobby was actually a Babylonian king called Nabonidus, who is known in the Bible because he invaded Israel. Apart from that, he was a passionate antiquarian, and he would go around digging up ancient temples and restoring them. And in fact, he became so passionate about this hobby that he forgot to actually rule and do a good job governing Babylon. And so his own people rose up against him and invited the Persians in, who then took over Babylon, and that was the end of the Neo-Babylon dynasty.
That's, I guess, some good perspective for people who think they might be spending a little too much time on their hobbies these days. If they haven't given up their own empire, they're not doing so bad, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hobbies are immersive, and he was certainly just totally captivated. He loved the past, actually. He gave that love to his own daughter, who was called Enigalda Nana, and she actually created the world's first museum. Her father would restore these old temples, 2,000-year-old temples at this point. He lived in the 6th century BC, and he was interested in temples built by the Sumerians over 2,000 years before, and he would find them, and he would get them going again and rebuild them and have install a priest to have some kind of worship going on there. And then they'd find these artifacts, which his daughter would then restore and display in her palace with little notes saying this was found at the Temple of Ur and things like that.
And then advancing a little bit in history to the Roman Empire. Again, we're talking the wealthier Romans here. What kind of hobbies did they get into?
Well, it's really interesting because, like the Greeks, they had slaves, and therefore anything manual was frowned upon. So things like collecting gold coins was completely fine, and Caesar Augustus, the first Roman emperor, was an absolutely avid collector of gold coins in particular, especially Greek ones. And then he would give a few to friends as well, that is a kind of token of his esteem. But when they talked about things like, oh, gardening is my hobby, they didn't actually mean, you know, gardening, because that's what slaves did. But, you know, wandering around the garden, perhaps snipping a rose or, you know, deadheading one flower was a hobby enough.
I understand you've gotten into gardening yourself, but you're a little more hands-on with it than a Roman patrician might have been.
Yes, I am. I think that one of the reasons why gardening has really taken off in the 20th century is that as we all live increasingly indoors, unlike the Romans did, the need to reconnect with the outside and to feel the elements in our hands has become incredibly important to mental health, which, you know, for the Romans and their sunshine and their olive oil and all that, you know, just they didn't need it in the same way that we do in the post-industrial age.
We're talking to author and historian Amanda Foreman about the past and present of hobbies. She wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal, Hobbies for Kings and the People. Well, let's get to the people now, Amanda. When did hobbies become something for closer to everyone anyway?
Well, the printing press in the 15th century really changed everything, because once you can read, and once you can get hold of books, then reading becomes a hobby, for example. And then also you have manuals, which can spread knowledge. So chess playing starts to really take off. Music can be printed, and then more people can learn instruments. And so that's the first time that you start to see, in paintings, for example, people doing ordinary things that we would call hobbies, like playing an instrument. But even then, there was this incredible snobbery about how good you got at doing something. So unlike today, to be really proficient at your hobby, say playing an instrument, might make you seem like you were a minstrel, you know, and which would then put you with the servant class. So, you know, you could be good, but not too good.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's bring on a caller with a modern hobby now at 800-642-1234. Malachi is with us in Richfield. Malachi, hello.
Hi.
What's your hobby, Malachi?
I do 3D printing.
3D wow. printing. I've seen that in action. What kind of stuff do you do with that?
Well, lately I've been doing a lot more printing tools for seamstresses to make masks.
Okay, so taking advantage of this skill, and I assume equipment you have access to help people with reaction to the COVID-19 outbreak?
Right, yeah, they're tape makers. They're just little tools that they can hold to help fold over fabric to make tape.
Cool. Malachi, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. And Amanda, that's kind of why we wanted to talk about hobbies now. A lot of people are getting into or getting back into their hobbies. And some of them, especially the quilters and seamstresses and whatnot, have a very practical application these days. Can you talk about turning to our hobbies in a time of need?
Yes, well, that really, for America, that really happened during the Great Depression, when suddenly millions of Americans were either, you know, unemployed or underemployed. And what were they going to do with their time? People had so much more time, and they needed to get purpose, they needed to feel a sense of achievement, but it also needed to be inexpensive. And hobbies just took off exponentially. Because it was a way of creating a schedule, meaning in a day that had been otherwise, you know, taken away from them because they had no job. And that's when you start to see things not just like, you know, stamp collecting, but hobbies such as crafting, making, quilting, woodwork, the stuff that, you know, you has a beginning, middle, and end, and you can look at it and say, I did that. I made that. And that's something that came out in a similar time, really. You know, the Great Depression and today, one of the things that we're seeing is mass joblessness and what you do with your time.
Malachi, thanks a lot for calling in and for the work you're doing. We continue our talk about hobbies with Amanda Foreman, historian and author. We're talking about her piece in the Wall Street Journal about the history of hobbies. And you can join in with your own hobby story at 800-642-1234. Whether you've revisited or taken up a new hobby thanks to the pandemic, or if you've been long practicing your hobbies, tell us what it is you do and maybe how and why you got started. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Nura went onto Facebook. She tells us, I knit, crochet, sew, listen to podcasts, and recently bought a vertical garden. My mom and auntie taught me how to crochet. My mom taught me how to sew. My parents, auntie and uncle, and great-grandparents did gardening, so I learned from them. My dear high school friend taught me how to knit in exchange for me teaching her how to crochet. So I love that the generational perspective there being handed down from person to person. Amanda, hobbies don't have to be solitary. We can share them with family and friends.
That's so true. And that's been one of the great innovations that's come with the internet, that as schools stopped teaching skills such as cooking and needlework and woodwork and craft making in general, YouTube took over, where if you didn't know how to do something, you would find somebody doing it on YouTube, and they would give you a 10-minute masterclass. You want to make pasta? Go on YouTube. Someone will show you how to do that. Want to learn how to knit? Watch somebody. They'll show you how to do it on YouTube. So that's been one of the great modern innovations that did not exist in history, where you had to learn all your skills from your mother or your father. or you ended up being without skills.
It's a way to learn those skills, and then also people can share them either by selling them online at the Etsy websites or other things like that, or just for fun and free. It's a way, we have lots of ways now to show the outcome of our work with other people.
Yeah, that's right. And it's much more meaningful than, say, what the Victorians did, where they really got into hobbies in a big way. The Industrial Revolution created a lot more time for a lot more people. There are just many more things to do and collect and make. But they had some pretty strange notions about what was worthwhile. So, for example, the Victorians loved taxidermy, stuffing dead animals. But they're not just, you know, putting the head of a fox on a board and then putting it on the wall. They like to stuff animals in human poses. So dancing mice was really popular, ice skating hedgehogs, rats playing cards, dancing cats. That kind of thing was just huge.
I don't think I'm going to take that one up myself, but more power to the Victorians. I do want to go back to our callers, though. James is with us in Northbrook, Illinois. James, hello.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
What do you want to tell us about, James?
Oh, well, I got two hobbies. I reactivated my glass insulator hobby, which is a very limited hobby. It's not a whole lot of people into it, but I collect those glass. They're all different kinds and types, and they have swirls, and they have a beauty to it, and they're on the old telephone poles. And I all brought out my Lionel Train set. And I have a really nice setup, so I have a lot to do on that. But I am actually working. I have a lot of projects I'm working on. But I kind of reactivated this because I don't have as much contact with a lot of my friends that I used to, except on the Internet.
Well, James, thanks for making contact with us and sharing that. So the train set, and then he mentioned these glass insulators, these parts on telephone poles. I know a lot of people in the industrial era, Amanda, or in recent years, they'll collect things like gears or, you know, pictures of rusting factories or things like that. There's a lot of fun ways to collect stuff that people might not think of as artistic objects in the first place.
That's so true. Also taking photographs of derelict asylums or grand houses or empty schools and hospitals. That's also another very popular hobby nowadays. One of the hobbies that I've learned recently is getting an uptick in popularity is collecting toy soldiers to recreate battle scenes. And interestingly enough, the first person to really popularize that as a hobby was the science fiction writer H.G. Wells, who wrote War of the Worlds, which eventually has been turned into lots of movies, including one starring Tom Cruise. And he would recreate these huge battle scenes, both battle scenes from the Civil War here in the U.S., as well as from the Napoleonic War in Europe. And he would invite friends over to smash and blow up the various soldiers, you know, to recreate well-known battles.
Thanks a lot for that comment. We'll go to Dennis now in Racine. Dennis, hello.
Hello. I love to take photographs with this ordinary small camera. It's easy to do, but I'm not a good photographer, but it is something. It costs, but then you can assemble them into large print albums. The result is going to be stunning.
Dennis, thank you so much. And even if you're not a good photographer, I can just about guarantee you're a better photographer than I am. And Dennis brings up a good point, Amanda. We don't necessarily have to be good at our hobby to get enjoyment from it.
No, that's absolutely right. Winston Churchill, Prime Minister of England during the World War II, took up painting in his 40s. He said that it actually rescued him from a very deep depression when his career was seemingly tanking, and he thought that he would never be in politics ever again. This is before he became Prime Minister. And he was never a good painter, and, you know, that's something that he himself freely admitted, but it didn't matter because it not only did it save him mentally, it gave him the greatest enjoyment. And nowadays people collect his work because they see something of the great man's personality in those paintings, which are so full of life and they're really vivid.
In our last few moments, Amanda, are you taking a renewed joy given the trouble in the world right now with your gardening hobby?
Yes, I am. I sometimes feel that if I'd had a previous life, I would have been a gardener. But you know what? Like many, many other Americans, I'm also taking up baking. Apparently, the banana bread is the most looked up recipe in Google right now.
I believe it. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. Take care. Stay safe.
You too. That was Amanda Foreman, a historian and author of several books, including her forthcoming book, The World Made by Women, A History of Women from the Apple to the Pill, out in 2021. She writes the Historically Speaking column for The Wall Street Journal. She's an honorary research senior fellow in the history department at the University of Liverpool. You can still weigh in on the conversation we just had about hobbies. Let us know about your hobby, if you're getting into it for the first time or getting back into it, where it came from, who you learned it from, and what you get out of it. Share some pictures, too. We've got some rag rugs there from one of our listeners, Linda, that she's been making. That looks pretty cool. I'm looking at a picture right now. Again, share yours over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.